Welcome to Making Waves, independent voices for peace and justice, your local connection to the world on WSCA LPFM, Portsmouth Community Radio. This is Steve Diamond, and today is April 15, 2006. Our focus today is on death and taxes. Here's what's coming up. A Making Waves interview with Melissa Bernardin of Priorities New Hampshire on where our tax money goes and what it could support instead, and coverage of the April 14th War Tax Resistance Action in Portsmouth, New Hampshire. We'll also hear from Joff Parrish on why pay taxes. That'll be followed by labor news with another view of the American economy and Michael Parenti on the upward shift of wealth distribution. We'll end with Between the Lines, independent radio out of Bridgeport, Connecticut. We'll also have music, announcements, and more, so stay with us. Unfortunately, we ran out of room in this week's show for our coverage of depleted uranium, but be sure to come to the upcoming Doug Roeke events in your area. First, some news. This is Steve Diamond with some recent news that you may have missed. From Bloomberg.com, U.S. says Iran could produce nuclear bomb in 16 days. Iran may be capable of making a nuclear bomb within 16 days, a U.S. State Department official said. Stephen Rademacher, U.S. Assistant Secretary of State for International Security and Nonproliferation, told reporters in Moscow, "Using those 50,000 centrifuges, they could produce enough highly enriched uranium for a nuclear weapon in 16 days." Rademacher was reacting to a statement by Iranian President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, who said yesterday the country had succeeded in enriching uranium on a small scale for the first time using 164 centrifuges. Rademacher said the technology to enrich uranium to a low level could also be used to make weapons-grade uranium, saying that it would take a little over 13 years to produce enough highly enriched uranium for a nuclear weapon with the 164 centrifuges currently in use. Iran has informed the Vienna-based International Atomic Energy Agency that it plans to construct 3,000 centrifuges at Natanz next year, Rademacher said. He added, "We calculate that a 3,000-machine cascade could produce enough uranium to build a nuclear weapon within 271 days, he said. If you want to contact the reporter who wrote that story, it was Sebastian Allison in Moscow, S-A-L-I-S-O-N, number 1, at Bloomberg.net. And from the New York Times, analysts say a nuclear Iran is years away. Western nuclear analysts said that Tehran lacked the skills, materials, and equipment to make good on its immediate nuclear ambitions, even as a senior Iranian official said Iran would defy international pressure and rapidly expand its ability to enrich uranium for fuel. The official, Mahmoud Saidi, the deputy head of Iran's Atomic Energy Organization, said Iran would push quickly to put 54,000 centrifuges online, a vast increase from the 164 they said that they had used to enrich uranium to levels that could fuel a nuclear reactor. Still, nuclear analysts called the claims exaggerated. They said nothing had changed to alter current estimates of when Iran might be able to make a single nuclear weapon, assuming that is their ultimate goal. The United States government has put that at 5 to 10 years, and some analysts have said it could come as late as 2020. Nuclear analysts said Iran's boast that it had enriched uranium using 164 centrifuges meant that it had now moved one small but significant step beyond what it had been ready to do nearly 3 years ago, when it agreed to suspend enrichment while negotiating the fate of its nuclear program. The nuclear experts said Iran's claim on Wednesday that it would mass-produce 54,000 centrifuges echoed boasts that it made years ago. Even so, they noted, the Islamic State still lacked the parts and materials to make droves of the highly complex machines, which can spin uranium into fuel rich enough for use in nuclear reactors or atomic bombs. It took Tehran 21 years of planning and 7 years of sporadic experiments, mostly in secret, to reach its current ability to link 164 spinning centrifuges in what nuclear experts call a cascade. Now, the analyst said, Tehran has to achieve not only consistent results around the clock for many months and years, but even higher degrees of precision and mass production. It is as if Iran, having mastered a difficult musical instrument, now faces the challenge of making thousands of them and creating a very large orchestra that always plays in tune and in unison. Mr. Saidi, the Iranian nuclear official, said Iran was moving rapidly towards its atomic goals. "We will expand uranium enrichment to industrial scale at Natanz," he was quoted as saying by the ISNA student news agency in a reference to Iran's main enrichment facility. Mr. Saidi said Iran would start operating the first of 3,000 centrifuges at Natanz by late 2006, with further expansion to 54,000 centrifuges. The news from Iran, which holds 10% of the world's oil reserves, has made oil markets very nervous and contributed to a spike in oil prices to nearly $70 a barrel. While Iran has recently raised its atomic claims in the past 2 days, nuclear analysts said it appeared to be roughly where it was expected to be on the road to learning how to enrich uranium on an industrial scale, and still had years of work ahead of it to attain its ambitious goals. Mr. Albright of the Institute for Science and International Security said in his March report that Iran had parts for perhaps 1,000 or 2,000 centrifuges beyond the ones already in operation, and that Iran is not likely to produce enough highly enriched uranium to make a nuclear weapon until 2009 at the earliest. And from the Washington Post, U.S. is studying military strike options on Iran. The Bush administration is studying options for military strikes against Iran as part of a broader strategy of coercive diplomacy to pressure Tehran to abandon its alleged nuclear development program, according to U.S. officials and independent analysts. No attack appears likely in the short term, and many specialists inside and outside the U.S. government harbor serious doubts about whether an armed response would be effective, but administration officials are preparing for it as a possible option and using the threat, as a senior official put it, to convince them this is more and more serious. According to current and former officials, Pentagon and CIA planners have been exploring possible targets such as the uranium enrichment plant in Natanz and the uranium conversion facility at Isfahan. Although a land invasion is not contemplated, military officials are weighing alternatives ranging from a limited airstrike aimed at key nuclear sites to a more extensive bombing campaign designed to destroy an array of military and political targets. Preparations for confrontation with Iran underscore how the issue has vaulted to the front of President Bush's agenda, even as he struggles with a relentless war in next-door Iraq. Bush views Tehran as a serious menace that must be dealt with before his presidency ends, aides said, and the White House, in its new national security strategy, last month labeled Iran the most serious challenge to the United States posed by any country. Many military officers and specialists, however, view the saber-rattling with alarm. A strike at Iran, they warn, would at best just delay its nuclear program by a few years, but could inflame international opinion against the United States, particularly in the Muslim world and especially within Iran, while making U.S. troops in Iraq targets for retaliation. Kurt Campbell, a former Pentagon policy official, said, "The Bush team is looking at the viability of airstrikes simply because many think airstrikes are the only real option ahead." The intensified discussion of military scenarios comes as the United States is working with European allies on a diplomatic solution. After tough negotiations, the UN Security Council issued a statement last month urging Iran to resuspend its uranium enrichment program. But Russia and China, both veto-wielding council members, forced out any mention of consequences and are strongly resisting any sanctions. U.S. officials continue to pursue the diplomatic course, but privately seem increasingly skeptical that it will succeed. The administration is also coming under pressure from Israel, which has told the Bush team that a moment of decision is fast approaching. Although Bush insists he is focused on diplomacy for now, he volunteered at a public forum in Cleveland last month his readiness to use force. He said, "The threat from Iran is, of course, their stated objective to destroy our strong ally, Israel. That's a threat, a serious threat. I'll make it clear again that we will use military might to protect our ally, Israel." Bush has also been privately consulting with key senators about options on Iran as part of a broader goal of regime change, according to an account by Seymour Hersh in the New Yorker magazine. The U.S. government has taken some preliminary steps that go beyond planning. The Washington Post has reported that the military has been secretly flying surveillance drones over Iran since 2004 using radar, video, still photography, and air filters to detect traces of nuclear activity not accessible to satellites. Hersh reported that U.S. combat troops have been ordered to enter Iran covertly to collect targeting data, but sources have not confirmed that to the Post. Israel recently leaked a contingency plan for attacking on its own if the United States does not, a plan involving airstrikes, commando teams, possibly missiles, and even explosives-carrying dogs. Israel, which bombed Iraq's Osirak nuclear plant in 1981 to prevent it from possibly being used to develop weapons, has built a replica of Natanz, according to Israeli media. The U.S. strategists do not believe Israel has the capacity to accomplish the mission without nuclear weapons. Iran appears to be taking the threat seriously. The government, which maintains its nuclear activities only for peaceful civilian purposes, has launched a program to reinforce key sites, such as Natanz and Isfahan, by building concrete ceilings, tunneling into mountains, and camouflaging facilities. Iran lately has tested several missiles in a show of strength. Although U.S. intelligence agencies estimate Iran is about a decade away from having a nuclear bomb, Israelis believe a critical breakthrough could occur within months. A U.S. official said, "What the Israelis are saying is this year, unless they are pressured into abandoning the program, would be the year they will master the engineering problem. That would be a turning point, but it wouldn't mean they would have a bomb. As the administration weighs these issues, two main options are under consideration, according to one person with contacts among Air Force planners. The first would be a quick and limited airstrike against nuclear-related facilities, accompanied by a threat to resume bombing if Iran responds with attacks in Iraq or elsewhere. The second calls for a more ambitious campaign of bombing and cruise missiles leveling targets well beyond nuclear facilities, such as Iranian intelligence headquarters, the Revolutionary Guard, and some in the government. Any extended attack would require U.S. forces to cripple Iran's air defense system and air force, prepare defenses for U.S. ground forces in Iraq and Afghanistan, and move Navy ships to the Persian Gulf to protect shipping. U.S. forces could launch warplanes from aircraft carriers, from the Diego Garcia Island base in the Indian Ocean, and, in the case of stealth bombers, from the United States. Planners also are debating whether launching attacks from Iraq or using Iraqi airspace would exacerbate the political costs in the Muslim world, which would see it as proof that the United States invaded Iraq to make it a base for military conquest of the region. But unlike the Israeli air attack on Osirik, a strike on Iran would prove more complex because Iran has spread its facilities across the country, guarded some of them with sophisticated anti-aircraft batteries, and shielded them underground. Pentagon planners are studying how to penetrate 8-foot-deep targets and are contemplating tactical nuclear devices. The Natanz facility consists of more than 24 buildings, including 2 huge underground halls built with 6-foot walls and supposedly protected by 2 concrete roofs with sand and rocks in between, according to a specialist at the Center for Strategic and International Studies. Former CIA analyst Kenneth Pollack said, "The targeteers honestly keep coming back and saying it will require nuclear penetrator munitions to take out those tunnels. Could we do it with conventional munitions? Possibly, but it's going to be very difficult to do so." And from the Associated Press, U.S. seeks to dampen talk of strike on Iran. The White House on Sunday sought to dampen the idea of a U.S. military strike on Iran, saying the United States is conducting, quote, normal defense and intelligence planning, as President Bush seeks a diplomatic solution to Tehran's suspected nuclear weapons program. Administration officials, from President Bush on down, have left open the possibility of a military response if Iran does not end its nuclear ambitions. Several recent reports said the administration was studying options for military strikes. One account raised the possibility of using nuclear bombs against Iran's underground nuclear sites. Britain's foreign secretary called the idea of a nuclear strike, quote, completely nuts. Bush has said Iran may pose the greatest challenge to the United States of any other country in the world, and while he has stressed that diplomacy is always preferable, he has defended his administration's first strike policy. Vice President Dick Cheney told the pro-Israel lobbying group AIPAC last month, quote, "The United States is keeping all options on the table in addressing the irresponsible conduct of the regime, and we join other nations in sending that regime a clear message. We will not allow Iran to have a nuclear weapon." Stephen Simbala, a Pennsylvania State University professor who studies U.S. foreign policy, said it would be no surprise that the Pentagon has contingency plans for a strike on Iran. But the administration's hint at military strikes is more of a show to Iran and the public than a feasible option. He said, "If you look at the military options, all of them are unattractive, either because they won't work or because they have side effects, where the cure is worse than the disease." And from OneWorld.net, Native Americans want bunker buster tests stopped. Native Americans want U.S. authorities to cancel plans to detonate 700 tons of explosives on what they say is tribal land in Nevada. The planned explosion, scheduled for June 2nd, some 90 miles from Las Vegas, is aimed at aiding U.S. efforts to develop bunker-buster weapons capable of penetrating solid rock. Officials have suggested the test would constitute the largest non-nuclear open-air blast in the test site's history. Federal officials have described such efforts as essential to the administration of President George W. Bush's self-styled War on Terror, but to leaders of the Shoshone, also known as the Niue people, the planned detonation is just the latest in a decades-long history of experiments at the Nevada test site to shake the earth and raise a dust cloud. Raymond Yowell, chief of the Western Shoshone Nation Council, said, "We are opposed to any future military testing on our lands." The site of the latest proposed test sits on the land recognized under the 1863 Treaty of Ruby Valley as part of the tribe's national territory, Shoshone leaders said, and the U.S. military therefore has no right to use it. The U.S. government disagreed and has asserted its ownership of the land. Kevin Rohrer, a spokesman for the National Nuclear Security Administration, which operates the test site, said, "Without going through a lot of detail, The issue of ownership of land area occupied by the Nevada test site, and for that matter very large sections of Nevada and Utah, is very complex, going back to the Ruby Valley Treaty, and in our eyes has been resolved. Shoshone elders rejected the government's position and last month won a victory in their fight to reclaim territory when the Geneva-based UN Committee on the Elimination of Racial Discrimination, CERD, said in a report that Washington's claim to the Western Shoshone land, quote, did not comply with contemporary human rights norms, principles, and standards that govern determination of indigenous property rights. Among other things, the panel cited special concern over the existence of nuclear waste dumped on tribal territory without consulting and over the objections of the Western Shoshone people. The 18-member panel also asked Washington to, quote, freeze, desist, and stop actions being taken against the Western Shoshone Nation. In the ruling, CERD also cited concerns over weapons testing at the Nevada test site, as well as efforts to build a high-level nuclear waste depository at Yucca Mountain. Tribal elders said Washington's plans to proceed with the June test in the face of the UN panel's findings was a slap in the face of the international and Native American communities. Next we have Don't Pay Your Taxes by Charlie King and Karen Brandon.
In New York City in 1982, when 1 million people took to the streets, I'll bet some of you were there. We learned that Secretary of State Alexander Haig was asked to comment on this march, and his comment was, let them march all they want, just as long as they continue to pay their taxes. So in that spirit, we offer.
The IRS says pay your dues. Business doesn't. Why should you? Don't pay taxes. Enron skipped a year or two. Show the tax man you're no fool at all. Yearly aggravation. Just pretend that you're a corporation and tell them that you're working hard, drilling oil wells in your yard. Don't pay your tax. A package you don't want or need arrives this April, COD. Don't demented terrorists have got you on their mailing list. Don't pay taxes. Please report these sleazy overspenders. Mark your tax return, return to sender. Call John Ashcroft or any Fed. It's obscene, unsolicited. Don't pay your tax. The dollars that you pay for war kill people in El Salvador. Don't pay taxes. If some escape to this fair land, your dollars send them back again. Don't pay taxes. The generals say they want you where they got you. They got you buying Black Hawk helicopters. You work for peace, you pray for it. If you hate war, don't pay for it. Don't pay your tax. Yeah, tell the IRS this year, let them know the buck stops here, and don't pay your tax.
Next, we're going to hear from Melissa Bernardin of Priorities New Hampshire on tax issues.
This is Amy Antonucci with Making Waves. Today, April 15th. Is what we here in the U.S. think of as Tax Day. Many of you have probably been preparing paperwork, finding out what you owe or will get back. But nowhere in the literature will the IRS tell you what your money will be used for once it makes its way into the U.S. coffers. What it is used for and what it could fund instead is what we will be exploring today with our guest, Melissa Bernardin, Grassroots Director for Priorities New Hampshire. Welcome, Melissa. Thanks so much for coming in.
Thanks for having me on the show, Amy.
According to the literature of Priorities New Hampshire, your mission is to change U.S. budget priorities to reflect a national commitment to education, healthcare, energy independence, job training, and deficit reduction at no additional taxpayer expense by eliminating funding for obsolete nuclear and Cold War weapons. Tell us more. Can you begin talking about the project that you're working with and the organization, Priorities New Hampshire?
Priorities New Hampshire is a project of Business Leaders for Sensible Priorities, and this was a group that was started by a group of people, one of whom was Ben Cohen of Ben & Jerry's. And the idea behind it is that business leaders have a particular voice in saying where we should spend our money, how it flows best in communities, how money works well for businesses and individuals. So a group of business leaders was brought together, as well as a military advisory board, that came to the conclusion that Americans don't really know where their tax money is spent, but once they find out where their tax dollars go, they'd like to see the money redirected. About 1 in 10 Americans know how their federal tax dollars are spent, but when they understand how Congress spends our tax money, about 2 out of 3 want more money to go into some of the areas that you mentioned that we talk about when we describe the mission of our organization: money for schools, healthcare, job training, energy independence, and generally less money for the Pentagon. What we stand for is moving $60 billion, or approximately 15% of the Pentagon budget that has been identified by military leaders as being spent on obsolete nuclear and Cold War weapons. And we want to see that money moved into programs that build stronger communities.
Melissa, what are our tax dollars funding now?
To talk about what our tax dollars are funding now, I think it's helpful to look at the federal budget in terms of three separate pots of money, or you could say three different pies. One of them is called the mandatory budget pie. One is called the discretionary budget pie, and the other is the war. So the mandatory part of the budget is money that comes into the government, and it's mandatory that it's spent on the purpose that it came in for. Another term that you could use is entitlement programs. You've probably heard that term used a lot in the media today. In other words, you pay money into Social Security, you pay money into Medicare, and you are entitled to receive benefits or services in return for what you paid in. That money can't really be moved around unless the laws actually change. So year to year, it generally, the money comes in and the money goes out, more or less dollar for dollar. So to talk about the second pot of money, that's discretionary. Congress has the discretion or the ability to decide on a year-by-year basis what programs they want to spend the money on. So the money that comes in is your federal withholdings and your paycheck. That can go into a variety of programs. It's everything, including the Pentagon budget outside of the current wars, and then education, healthcare, job training, environment, energy, health, everything else that the government is responsible for paying for, transportation, et cetera, et cetera. Then the third budget pie or pot of money is the war budget. You've heard of the supplemental, the budget supplemental that pays for the war. And it's questionable where that money is coming from. I think that money is money that is now putting the country into debt. It's money that we don't have money coming in for. It's borrowed money. So those are the three budget pies.
Now, this supplemental spending on the war, this is a new program for the Iraq War specifically. Is that true?
That is true. And thanks for asking that question, because it's good to clarify that when we talk about the Pentagon, there's the Pentagon budget that Priorities New Hampshire is addressing, and the part of the Pentagon budget that we want to see moved into social programs, is the money that is spent on building and maintaining our weapon systems and our defense systems and training the military and military preparedness. The money that's being spent on the Iraq war and that was spent in Afghanistan is a separate pot of money that's actually using all of those weapons that we build and maintain in the Pentagon discretionary budget. So you can think about defense spending as the two separate parts. The one part is building and maintaining and training, and the other part is using. The using is the budget supplemental. So to finish the answer to your question of where do our tax dollars go, when you're talking about the money you pay for the federal budget outside of Social Security and Medicare and Medicaid, about 50 cents on every dollar goes into the Pentagon and 50 cents goes into everything else.
And this is where your project, the Common Sense Budget Act, comes in, correct?
That's right.
Tell us about that.
The Common Sense Budget Act is the piece of legislation that would bring the change to the federal budget that we're supporting. It's a piece of legislation that would cut the part of the Pentagon budget that has been identified as being wasteful, being spent on programs that are wasteful and obsolete, and it would shift that money into programs that help our communities. The Common Sense Budget Act is a piece of legislation in Congress. It has been introduced. It has a couple congressional co-sponsors that are from the state of California. And we urge the people of New Hampshire to help out and in moving this legislation forward by asking their elected officials and candidates for office to publicly support this legislation. Specifically, the programs that have been identified for being cut were identified by a member of our military advisory board. Lawrence Korb was an assistant secretary of defense under President Reagan, and he believes that without compromising our national security in any way, we can save $60 billion, mostly by eliminating Cold War era weapons systems designed to fight the former Soviet Union. And that includes a combination of cutting our nuclear arsenal, cutting the National Missile Defense Program, scaling back weapons that are useless to combat modern threats, eliminating forces not needed in the current geopolitical environment, and making the Pentagon function better, and eliminating defense budget earmarks. And through those savings, we can then take that $60 billion and fund things like providing Head Start for all kids who are eligible for that, providing health insurance for all kids who can't go to the doctor now because they don't have health insurance. We could achieve energy independence, and we could feed most of the kids who are starving around the world.
So this is sort of finally cashing in the peace dividend we were promised at the end of the Cold War, is that correct?
That's right. And you're asking a good question, which is, well, if we're not fighting the Cold War anymore, why are we still funding the Pentagon at Cold War levels? And it's really mind-boggling that the defense budget is still so large. Prior to the Iraq War, the defense budget, the Pentagon was just still growing and growing and growing. Why was that happening? And really what it comes down to is the power of the defense industry in ensuring that they continue to have contracts to build these weapons that in reality are doing nothing for our national security. Many of these programs are doing nothing for our national security.
My understanding is that of the lobbyists in D.C., the largest group belong to defense contractors.
You could be right. One illustration of how our government is in a vicious cycle of continuing to fund programs that are really not helping to protect our national security is when you look at the National Missile Defense Program. This is a program that has proven to be an utter failure year after year, yet is continually funded. To explain very briefly what this program is, it's designed to intercept a weapon coming from around the world. To intercept that missile, we would have to send something up at the exact speed to the exact location up in the sky and intercept it.
This sounds like a good time for the audio demonstration that you've brought today, Melissa. Tell us what that's going to be about.
I'm going to illustrate for the listeners through sound the size of the current U.S. nuclear arsenal. We do this demonstration to show average Americans, and I think also to convince people who might think that we need to continue to build nuclear weapons, that we really do not. But I'll let you listen and you can be the judge of that. Okay, the first sound you're going to hear is the sound of one nuclear weapon in the United States arsenal. This has the power of 20 times the destruction caused by the bomb dropped on Hiroshima, which killed 140,000 people and eventually killed 240,000 people. The next sound you're going to hear is the number of nuclear weapons that it would take to completely devastate Russia. And the remainder is the current size of the U.S. nuclear arsenal.
You're listening to Making Waves. This is Amy Antonucci, and at the moment, we are speaking with Melissa Bernardin from Priorities, New Hampshire. Melissa is doing an audio demonstration about the size of the current nuclear arsenal of the United States. One BB equals 15 times the power of a Hiroshima bomb. Five BBs would be enough to obliterate Russia. And what you are hearing now is the sound of BBs representing all the weapons in our nuclear arsenal falling into a metal pail.
The chairman of our military advisory committee likes to finish by saying, "I feel safe reducing nuclear weapons. Do you?"
That sure sounded like enough to me. I pulled this quote from your website. It says, quote, "At Business Leaders for Sensible Priorities, we feel it is time to get readjusted to reality. We have enough money. We can provide for the needs of our and the world's children at no additional expense to the taxpayer." End quote. However, the news that most of us hear tells us of fiscal crises, that there isn't enough money to support current spending levels on education, on social services, on appropriate armor for our troops in Iraq, and that we have this ballooning national debt. So what's the reality? How can we determine what's real here?
The reality is that we have the money, it's just a matter of priorities. The whole point of Priorities New Hampshire and Business Leaders for Sensible Priorities is talking to the American public and letting them know that if we communicate what our values are and what we would like to see our federal budget look like, then we can put the money into what we need it to be spent on. When our legislators and our elected officials say, "No, we can't fund this, no, we can't fund that," our response should be, "Why aren't you talking about other things that are funded year after year after year that are not priorities of the American people?" When Americans are asked what they believe they want our money to be spent on, the overwhelming majority want to see money shifted away from the Pentagon and into healthcare, education, job training, energy independence, and deficit reduction. So it's a matter of political will.
From your demonstration, it's clear that we have a tremendous arsenal of nuclear weapons. And yet, despite our signing the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty, we're not getting rid of them at the rate that we had promised to. In fact, we're making more. And we continue to demand of other countries to not even have nuclear power plants because they could someday be converted to weaponry. That strikes me as hypocritical. I wonder what you think about that.
The way I look at what the United States is saying to other countries and what kind of weapons we have here in our own country is akin to someone having 10 cigarettes in their mouth, puffing on 10 cigarettes and pointing at someone else and saying, you shouldn't smoke. We really don't have the standing to be telling other countries to not be developing nuclear weapons when we have such an arsenal here.
I'd like to ask you a question from another point of view about your campaign. And the essential question is, do you think it goes far enough? First of all, it sounds like it's still leaving an unimaginable amount of money for war and defense spending. What's your reaction to that?
There's a huge spectrum in the American public about how much we should spend on defense and how powerful America should be in the world. Priorities New Hampshire and Business Leaders for Sensible Priorities are addressing the general public, and we want to communicate the values of the overwhelming majority of America to Congress. So what this project is focusing on from now through the 2008 primary, through elections after that, is addressing the money that is clearly being spent on wasteful, unnecessary, obsolete weapons programs that just about everybody can agree have no use whatsoever in any sort of protection of our nation.
The second part of that question, which you've already somewhat answered, at least in what you just said, but I'll ask anyway, is that I don't hear in the campaign an indictment of war or aggression or our U.S. foreign policy. There's a call to get rid of programs that won't be useful in wars that we're most likely to be waging. But it's not questioning the fundamental values and behavior of our country as far as our war-making, aggressive stance in the world, our bullying behavior and propping up of violent regimes in other places in the world that lead to some of the unrest and anger towards our country that really creates the violence and the lack of safety in the world in the first place.
We believe that there are many individuals and organizations that are publicly addressing those questions, that have the expertise to talk about that and to lead us into a discussion about the most constructive way to bring peace to the world. At Priorities New Hampshire, our focus, as I mentioned, is on that part of the Pentagon budget that just about everyone can agree is unnecessary. And we want to focus on a positive vision for the future of what that chunk of money would mean to America, to a strong, safe America here at home. We want to see that money, and America wants to see that money, invested in jobs, education, healthcare, energy independence, and deficit reduction. We really want to focus on how do we make America strong here at home.
I have a question for you now, Melissa, about a recent piece of news. This past week, the U.S. House leadership was not able to pass the 2007 budget before the congressional recess, which is always their goal. What's your take on this development?
The inability of Congress to pass the budget before the tax day recess is an indication of how split the ideology is of many people in this country. While the public can come together and agree on different values, in Congress there is a real struggle, especially within the Republican Party right now, where conservatives want to cut social service programs and cut down the deficit, whereas moderate Republicans want to see less cuts to social services. In other words, they want to maintain more of the social services, healthcare, etc. So there was a breakdown and the budget was not passed. So this is really an indication that this country has got to come together and determine what our priorities are. And I believe that the breakdown in the budget negotiations was an indication that there's too much deficit spending and there's too much of a push to cut social programs without questioning what values are coming out of Congress and what values are coming out of the administration. We'll have to see what happens when Congress is back in session, but these next couple weeks do offer a window for individuals to communicate with their congressional representatives.
So now, as is always
a critical piece on our show, we would love to hear how our listeners, how we can get involved with this campaign or on this issue.
So far, I've talked a lot about the role of business leaders and the role of military authorities on this subject. And I want to make it very clear that the people and the people of New Hampshire and the people of this country have an extremely important role in helping to achieve this goal of moving the wasteful spending out of the Pentagon and into building stronger communities. And the business leaders realized that a few years ago and realized that the people have the power. We really need the grassroots to pressure our elected officials to do the right thing. Because we realize that it's the grassroots that are really going to push this initiative forward, True Majority was started. It's an online membership organization that allows people to communicate with their elected officials pretty easily through sending emails and signing petitions online. True Majority has 500,000 members around the country, and we have over 3,000 members in New Hampshire, and people can find more out about True Majority at truemajority.org. We believe that collectively we have the power to do this. And so what we want to do in New Hampshire is to create an environment where elected officials and candidates for office feel pressure to invest in stronger communities and eliminate these obsolete weapons programs. So what's going to be happening with Priorities New Hampshire and the help of the True Majority membership in the state is that we want to educate the public and then show them how they can communicate their values and their spending priorities to decision makers. Most people agree with what we're talking about. We don't really need to persuade people. So our challenge is bringing this message to every corner of the state. And we do that through helping people to recognize our logo. We are trying to get our logo wherever we can. In the media, we have lapel pins that people can wear. We're going to have 3 or 4 different vehicles driving around the state that have that Budget Pie logo. One of our mobiles is the Pigmobile. It's a giant pink pig that has Pentagon written on it, and it's followed by a couple smaller pigs that represent federal spending on education and world hunger. So it really demonstrates how out of whack our federal spending priorities are. The Pigmobile is available for anyone who wants to drive it. We also have an Oreo-mobile, which uses giant Oreos to demonstrate the federal spending categories, where we stack piles of Oreos and people can see where they might want to shift the Oreos around. Another vehicle we have is called the Carney-mobile. That's a new vehicle that's going to be coming to the state. It's actually coming May 1st, and it's going to be here for 3 months. We are going to be showing people the budget wheel of fortune. They can play the game or use a high striker where they can strike a mallet and talk to the entertainer about schools versus Cold War weapons. And we have a specific event that's coming up that we want to invite people to take part in, and that is a tax day action. The actual deadline for mailing your individual taxes is Tuesday, but we have an event coming up on Monday. People are invited to the post office on Main Street in Keene and on Elm Street in Manchester between 3 and 6 p.m. We're going to be handing out leaflets and talking to taxpayers, asking them the question, your tax dollars, your choices. We want to show them how their tax money is spent and help them communicate their own priorities to Congress. And if people want more information on that, they can give us a call at Priorities New Hampshire at 224-3800, or they can go to our website, which is prioritiesnh.org. So we have lots of opportunities for people to get involved. We need help scheduling Piggy, Carney-mobile, and Oreo-mobile at fairs and festivals, at people's work, at schools. Wherever we're invited, we would like to come. We would like people to help contact elected officials. We'll have letter writing campaigns. We can get together and have meetings with our congressional elected officials, and you can get together with other True Majority members. We'll help schedule those meetings for you. And we're really looking forward to bird dogging candidates for office. What that is asking congressional and presidential candidates where they stand on the issue. And specifically, we want to ask them to support the Common Sense Budget Act to move that $60 billion from the Pentagon into building stronger communities. And we can help people to feel more comfortable doing that. We'll also come to any community event you'd like us to. So we do ask people to give us a call at 224-3800 or go to our website, which is prioritiesnh.org.
I have personally seen the Oreo Mobile and highly recommend it. It's a pretty amazing display and a lot of fun, actually.
The whole idea is to help people understand the federal budget. In a way, it's very complicated and it's overwhelming, but we make it simple, easy, fun, very plain to understand, and we just want to have a conversation with New Hampshire about what our values are and make sure that our values are expressed in how our money is spent.
Thank you so much for coming in today, Melissa. It was great to talk to you. This was Melissa Bernardin from Priorities New Hampshire. She's a grassroots director. We've been talking today about how our tax dollars are spent and how they might be better spent. Thanks again.
Thank you, Making Waves.
Singing a song of taxes, working class cancer sore. Be in Boston Harbor and Revolutionary War of giving to the rich and taking from the poor. Sing a song of taxes, let's even up the score. Sing a song of taxes in the presidential pew. Throw in greased senators and corrupt congressmen in the brew. Add a depraved governor, the Education Regency Board, a few greedy city council members, and Attila the Hun's great horde. Let's all tax the trucker for driving down the road, and tax the company janitor for cleaning the commode. Put a levy on the mechanic for changing auto oil. Don't forget the tired farmer for turning up the soil. Tax the college student for learning how to think. And tax the hotel maid for scrubbing out the sink. Don't overlook the waitress for serving up the food. And tax the exotic lady for dancing in the nude. Let's tax the faithful mother for bringing up her son. And tax our country's children for chewing bubble gum. Put a tax on entertainment, cigarettes and the liquor store. Raise sales tax, shift the burden to the homeless and the poor. Sing a song of taxes, fight illegal wars for oil. Slash aid for the veterans, dig out on the corporate spoil. Privatize Social Security, fill the purse of the Wall Street whore. Reduce firefighters, police, and the planet's health just ignore. Build some Mimex missiles and a B-51 or two. Bring the world with laser weapons, paint them all red, white, and blue. Print up some cardboard money, who cares if we all go broke? Who'll notice it's our fault when the planet goes up in smoke? Supply-side neo-con men with a trillion-dollar rip-off scam. Give the poor half a cup of water and the rich Grand Coulee Dam. Borrow from our children's future on the backs of the working class. Buy the wealthy a few more yachts while the rest take it in the ass. Tax us up every oil, keep giving us the screw. And next time the vote comes round, find out what the people can do. Run your pork fat butts out of office, put your family on the welfare line. You'll be in some federal hole, bottoms up doing hard rock time. Sing a song of taxes,
U.S. National Bank. Open up the vaults, clean out the septic tank. Cry out from the gutter, beat on your garbage can. There's a God in heaven up above, save us all from the tax man. Sing a song of taxes, working class cancer sore. He in Boston Harbor and Revolutionary War. Of giving to the rich and taking from the poor. We're all mad as hell and we ain't gonna take no more.
That was Taxes by Homeless in America. Next, we have a report from the April 14th Tax Awareness Action, Penny Pohl.
This is Amy Antonucci for Making Waves. I'm in downtown Portsmouth on Friday, April 14th, 4 p.m. And here in front of the Portsmouth Post Office, there are a number of people out here holding a display. Let's speak with the man behind the display. Hello. What is your name?
My name is Jeff White.
Tell us about this very large sign. Says, your tax dollars, your choices. And there are a number of plastic tubes. Each is under a category such as environmental protection, deficit reduction, veterans benefits, nuclear weapons. So, Jeff, could you tell us about this?
Sure. Last year I stood out here and did the same thing. It wasn't quite as elaborate. I had a little yoga mat and I had some jars and got some pennies, and I asked people to basically put, I gave them 10 pennies and asked them to put the pennies in the jars that they felt should be the priorities of federal spending. And the results last year were pretty overwhelming. It's basically the inverse of what the federal government actually does, which is the money was mostly spent on education, healthcare, environmental protection, that sort of stuff, and there was very little money in some of the other things such as nuclear weapons and military spending. So I do it to make a point that our government is so out of touch with what people actually want and what our priority should be, and this is not, I mean, it's never been more true than now, I think, you know, with all the corruption and the insanity of this federal budget. The deficit that we're living our children and their children and their children. So I think it's critical. The way the budget is right now, $480 billion to the Pentagon and to basically the military, and that's more than all the other countries in the world put together, which is basically suicide. It's unsustainable. There's no other civilization in the history of the planet that has ever extended its military so far and wide over the planet and actually lived to tell the tale about it. We're on a crash course with reality, I think, and the reality is we can't continue this insanity. We give you 10 pennies, you put them where you think the money should be spent.
So far, the most pennies seem to be in environmental protection and agriculture and food safety.
I guess what amazes me is this something that we don't even really talk about in our society of where our money is being spent. You know, people are concerned about all these issues, but yet nobody's willing to stand up and really question the federal government about where billions of dollars are going. And even if you're for the military in the war in Iraq, we could still cut the budget and get rid of a lot of the waste. In fact, there's over $9 billion missing in Iraq alone. It just disappeared. Just poof, vanished. That could fund all these other things. Really, we could still have a strong military and we could still dominate the planet, but we could do it in a more efficient way. However, I happen to think that that's even not the way to go. But for those people who really think we need a strong military, we can still do it a lot cheaper than we're doing it now. The other thing is, if you defund education, healthcare, and all these other things, what's left to defend if we destroy everything?
Hi.
Hello.
And could you give your name?
My name is Edith Pearson, and I live in Elliott, Maine.
And can you tell us why you are out here today?
Because I don't want my tax money being spent on military equipment that kills people.
So it sounds like you'd have it spent on something else.
On health care, yes, and improving our infrastructures in the country, supporting education for the people who need more education.
Thanks.
You're welcome.
Did you come here to the vigil, or were you walking by and you stopped to...
What we're waiting for, you see, is for the poor man to say, why are we dying for the rich man? Why do your children go to such better schools? Why do your children eat so much better? Why do they have so much better opportunity? You know, just because you're wealthy, why do we put up with that? Why do we elect people from only a certain economic strata? Only the very wealthy get elected. What do they know? What do they know about the needs of the everyday person? Nothing. They pretend. And so why does everybody stand on the sideline and not recognize these factors? Why does nobody ask, hey, wait a minute, we have to die for you. Where are your kids? These are the questions. At least, you know, a good bunch of the questions. A country like this, if we can afford B-3 bombers, why can't it afford to educate its own?
This is Amy Antonucci with Making Waves, here in front of the Portsmouth Post Office. It's almost 5:30. There have been quite a number of people who've come by and participated in the poll. What would you say the number has been?
Around 20.
About
25. So 20 to 25. Okay. Let's look at the results. All right. I'll just give you my estimate here. Well, environmental protection is definitely number one. Healthcare and education and childcare pretty much tie for second. Then we've got energy independence. Those are all real high. Next, probably agriculture and food safety and veterans benefits would tie with housing and development close behind. Job training and deficit reduction, definitely the next. And then for our last three categories, in descending order, we've got homeland security, and then probably a tie between nuclear weapons and Iraq-Afghan wars. They definitely lose.
They give you 10 pennies, you put them where you think the money should be spent. It's your tax dollars, your opinion.
To hear our previous shows, please visit our archive online at www.freewebs.com/sprav/audio.htm. Please email nhmakingwaves@yahoo.com and let us know what you think of our show. And feel free to call the station in the next hour for more information, 430-9722.